try to do Frightmare?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking we're both going to go.
Us, you and me?
Yeah, then we might get sent there to check out the tracks and everything.
When is it exactly?
The first weekend in May.
The first weekend in May?
Yep. If you got something going on, it's cool,
that's,
man.
That's my wife's, my wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to go.
I don't know.
Well,
I
see, she might want to go. You might want to see.
We might have to check on that.
Tell her sometimes it's for you. It's not about her.
But, well, nah. Shit, I don't know. I might be out of town, but... You might get sent, and then you can come back with all the goodies.
That's right. Make all the contacts and everything else.
So I forgot to get my notebook out, so you guys can just continue okay. chatting while I try to formalize this shit.
Let's go ahead and just take it from here. We got a couple of guests on the recording tonight, and if you guys would introduce yourselves, please.
My name's John.
My name's Adam.
And John, I met by the news whenever I got my Scary Dad logo. John is the guy that did the commission and created the Voodoo Priest Swamp thing that you see. Really, really love it, and I wanted to invite him on and let him talk about his artwork and his background and just give you guys a little information about him. He did an excellent job. If you want to give him a shout out about the work he's done, just go ahead and drop us a comment and I'll pass it on to him. But
okay,
Billy's so back.
I found my damn notebook. I knew there was something missing the whole time. You know, professionalism being what it is, sometimes the notebook is in the bag.
Oh, and one more thing. We're recording tonight from Cedar Creek,
Heights. We're doing a little bit of, remote. We're at Cedar Creek. This is episode 20 of the Scared Ed podcast. This episode will be dropping on February 27th, 2017. And this is a remote. So the subject is John.
Adam.
Adam had a few things he wanted to talk about also to go ahead and apprise you guys of.
And we're going to chat. So before we get into it, we're going to go ahead and take care of the history segment. It's not too long because as I looked tonight on the 27th, February 27th, there was lots of history, but none of it was very horrifying. I mean, there was plane crashes and burnt buildings and lots of shit happened that people died, but it was not...
No heads were cut off.
Not especially scary. It was just a statistical thing. What's that, it's a Stalin quote, but it's also a Megadeth lyric. If you kill one man, you're a murderer. You kill a thousand. If you kill a million, you're a god. Okay, notable births. 272, Constantine the Great was born.
Awesome, great name.
Good name for a comic book character.
Nice.
1902, John Steinbeck. He's okay. The one that wrote about how everything sucked back in the 30s.
Yes, yeah.
And everybody went on a road trip, and the road trip sucked too. Nothing was good back then. 1932, Elizabeth Taylor was born.
Okay.
She was Cleopatra.
You know, I love that story about her and Michael Jackson and Marlon Brando.
And the monkey?
No, well, when they went on a road trip after the 9/11 attacks, they decided to evacuate where they live, and they jumped in a car together and split. And I would have loved to have been in the backseat for that road trip.
That was like, that would be a strange movie. That would be worse than like
they were supposed to make a movie about it.
Fear and loathing sort of stuff, like slapping bats at the fly swatter in the middle of the desert.
The music arguments, I could just imagine who was going to pick the next CD that was going to come on.
Okay, 1940, Howard Hessman. Johnny Fever from
yes.
WKRP, he was born. So none of that's scary, but it's
cool.
Fun.
I told you I bought that box set of WKRP first season the other day.
I just found,
awesome.
Today at Goodwill, I found season one of The Addams Family wrapped in plastic on VHS.
Which one was it? Because I saw one today too. it was still wrapped in plastic. I've been killing it at Goodwill the past week.
$2. Can't. Oh, dude, that's badass.
I found a Techniques SL-D5 turntable at a Goodwill for it's a $200 turntable, and it's in perfect working condition.
As soon as I stop needing to use my flashlight, I'm going to show you a picture. And you're going to be like, holy shit, and I bought that too.
The light's a little dim in Cedar Creek tonight.
Okay, so notable deaths. 2003, we lost Mr. Rogers.
Big part of a lot of people I know their childhood.
And in 2015, we lost Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
So neither one of them were scary either, but we liked them.
Trekkies on there, pour one out. Feel free.
So check out this picture, bro. I found the most metal-ass fucking book at Goodwill.
That is pretty sweet.
Check that book out.
Whoa.
Wow.
Goodwill?
At Goodwill. It was 89 cents. Hey, now, man. It turns out this is this guy who wrote it, Richard DeHaan, he's a minister. So this is like an anti-book.
Okay.
But the name of the book, mm-hmm. like, if I was like, I'm writing a book, what do I want to call it? Well, it's about two young lovers who met upon a balcony. What do you want to call your book? I want to call it Satan, Satanism, and Witchcraft.
Full Perfect stop. Name.
Damn.
Goodwill is badass.
Oh, it's awesome, dude. So I found a ton of Halo toys yesterday and Marvel Select figures from 2003 and just all kinds of cool stuff this week.
And with that, we get rid of the phone. We get into the subject matter. So, We were just joking about whatever we were talking about. What were you talking about?
Talking about Goodwill. And then we were talking... No, that was after the fact. God. Another shot!
It's time for a shot.
What were we talking about? Anybody remember? You guys remember what we were talking about before we started history?
I think it was Dallas Horicon.
Yeah, we're talking about Dallas Horicon. That's coming up first month of May. First weekend of May. You can't go, of course. Because you have duties. You have your duties to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, just we got you here, John. Like I said, we have the logo out. I love it. And I just wanted to bring you on, let you introduce yourself, and let people know who is behind the Swamp Thing logo on the website. So,
history, but the picture was, I was looking for pictures of Swamp Thing, but they were all from the comic book. I was looking specifically for, like, just sketches, see if I could find something, just maybe a pose that I liked. Well, I ended up finding was a picture of Bernie Wrightson's sketch of a Swamp Thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I figured, I like this angle, it works. And so what I basically did was, I looked at it, basically pick and chose what I liked about it and redid it. I put in the face paint part of it. A lot of the voodoo stuff that I looked for, it was basically just flat black face
right.
with the skull.
Right.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to leave it where it was the natural, like, vines and everything growing from them.
Right.
So I just left that, but just added the white paint and the top hat and gave it the purple band and the feather.
Yep.
Basically, voodoo priest, pimp and daddy, Swamp Thing.
You mentioned Wrightson.
Yeah.
Have you been a fan of his work? You like? We talk about him a lot on this program because he is my favorite artist, and Billy admires him as well. And so he did a lot of horror stuff, you know, brought a lot of that to us.
It's not that I like Wrightson's work, but I wouldn't say that I'm like the hardcore Wrightson fan. I'm more of, to be honest with you, he's actually really big on fantasy and horror with Simon Bisley.
Yes, yeah.
He did
a lot of heavy metal work too. He did several heavy metal covers.
Heavy metal, Constantine, and Lobo. And
Drunk Bisley at Comic Palooza a year or two ago had a couple books that I wanted him to sign. He was doing a commission, and he was either hungover, still drunk, or drunk again from the night before. But it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, and he had ink all over his hands. So I handed him my book that was, and again, we've talked about this before, I don't care so much because I'm not going to sell it. The reason I'm getting my artist to sign it is because I like the artist. I don't care about the fact that it was in perfect condition when I handed it to him. His inky fingers bent the spine, and then he just signed his name right across Lobo's face and then, like, kind of threw it back at me. And then he's like, "What's up, man? Where are we drinking?" And I was like, no. I was like, "Dude, you just fucked up my book, man." But I love Simon Beasley.
The best story I have about him was I wanted him to sign my Lobo trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, "All right, I signed your book, $5. I didn't have $5. So he goes, "You gotta have something. Go sell something, whatever, I don't care." He goes, "You got a cell phone?" So I pull out my cell phone, it's a flip phone. And he starts looking at it, and he's laughing. And he goes, "Go sell this and bring back $5. And I'm like, I don't really have anything else. So I pull out my pockets, my wallet's empty. He goes, "You know what? Here's $20, and he reaches into the little money box that he has and just gives me $20 and goes, "Here, go have some fun." And signs my book and just goes, "Get out of here."
That's cool, man.
And then Well, I went to Alamo City Comic Con, and he was there. And so I had him sign my Judge Dredd Batman book. And I gave him $5, and he goes, "What's this for?" I said, "For signing my Lobo book back at Comicpalooza."
Yeah, I owed you that, buddy.
Yeah, he was doing this commission. He was drawing Batman. That's why he had his fingers. He was drawing it, but he was not paying attention. His finger, his back of his hand had ink all over it. And, he kept, getting books, and he'd sign it, and then he'd turn around and talk to somebody, and then he'd go back like he was going to sign it again, and there's all people in the line like, no. He's like, "Oh, yeah, there you go."
I had him do one original piece, and it was on Judge Dredd blank, and I had him do Judge Dredd and Batman facing each other, which I love the cover, but I was really going, I really should have had him do a Lobo book, had him do Lobo piece.
I love Lobo, man.
When he was in, I think it was Dallas for the Stan Lee Marvelous Eve or...
Oh, yeah, the thing is bad for New Year's Eve.
Yeah. When I seen that he was there as a guest, I'm going, I should have been there. Had him do, $200, $300, pay him to do a whole original Lobo full body.
Right.
And it's like, I didn't care. I just wanted Lobo.
Are you a fan of Lobo?
Oh, big fan.
I love Lobo, man. Customers were at the house the other night, and they loved my comment I always made. Is Lobo was Deadpool before Deadpool was Deadpool.
Oh, big time.
You know, and people don't remember that. I would love, that's one movie I would love to see as a Lobo movie.
They would have to do that right. And
oh, yeah.
Not with The Rock. Not with...
No.
Honestly, not even with Lesnar, even though he has the physical statue of Lobo. It would have to be somebody that's big chested but actually muscular.
But you could do that with makeup and everything. So,
yeah,
you can do a lot of stuff with makeup.
I think it would make it look more natural though. Like
yeah.
Better do like they did with Ron Perlman and Hellboy.
I always got the guy that did Krampus. What's his name? He was a big old dude. He did he was the Krampus in the movie that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. He'd probably be good in a role, but I would love to see Ron Perlman in that role, to be honest with you.
Ron Perlman would probably pick it. Well, I don't know. Well, yeah, after Sons of Anarchy, he just grew his hair long and throw him back on a bike with a shotgun. He'll
You remember Ice Pirates? I still remember Ice Pirates. I love that movie, man. It's on Amazon. And I watched it again the other day, and Ron Perlman's in it. And he looks like the same age he looked in Hellboy. It's the weirdest thing, man. It was like 30 years ago or some shit.
Yeah, he's always getting a bad rap for being ugly, but he gets roles, and right. I mean, I never really thought he was ugly per se. I think he's, but he was in Beauty and the Beast. He was the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, and
I actually have a really good Ron Perlman story. Two of them, actually. Last year, when I was doing Space City Comic Con, he was actually at a booth of mine. Because I had sold some Ron Perlman Hellboy pictures, and apparently I sold eight of them, and he had signed a few, and I guess some woman
pointed out that you were over there.
And he comes up to the table. I'm not even looking up. I'm just doing my painting. And he comes over. He goes, "You the one with the Hellboy pictures?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, yeah, I think you give me a few." And I said, "All right, it's $1 a piece." And so I look up, and Ron Perlman just right there in front of me.
He's like, "Here you go."
I'm going, in my head, did I just tell Ron Perlman it's $1 for his own face? But
did he pay?
No, I gave him room for free.
Okay, I'm sure he signed something for you, though.
No.
He didn't. Why didn't you tell him to, man? That would have been the condition.
It was actually more of a thank you, because the year before, when I went to Alamo City, when he was out there for the Sons of Anarchy that they were having out there, he actually said happy birthday to my friend on the telephone.
Okay.
And I hand him the phone. He says happy birthday from Hellboy. And I get back the phone to my friend. She's on the other line. She's crying, hysterical. She's in a Golden Corral. It's her birthday. And she's just crying. I can hear in her voice just shaking and everything. Her mom and sister are laughing their asses off.
That's killer. Every now and then you meet a writer or an artist that's just goes above and beyond it. It was at whatever one where they screwed everybody over.
The Space City.
Was it Space City this year? With the Sons of Anarchy, Liam Sharp, who's now the current artist on Wonder Woman, and Joe Gisco had a table next to each other, and they were selling prints and stuff. And my daughter, she's a huge Wonder Woman fan. And so I buy her Wonder Woman stuff all the time. And so we'd come in, and their table was kind of near the entrance. And so we walked all around the convention. I told my daughter, you can have what you want. And we were in there for 5 minutes. And she was like, I want this picture. And it was a Wonder Woman print, a black and white print. And I was like, okay. And I think they were like 10 bucks or 20 bucks or whatever it was for a print and signature. I was like, okay, well, we've been here for 5 minutes. So let's, and she's 5 years old. So I'm like, we're going to walk around and see if there's not something else that you want more in the next little while.
Right.
But moving around through the show, we ended up kept coming back to this table, and she kept on, you know. So he started noticing her and was like, you know, talking to her and like, oh, you like Wonder Woman? And he was doing a sketch and he was showing her what he was doing and stuff. And so, you know, hour or two later, we're starting to get towards done, and I was like, okay, baby, what did you decide you wanted? She's like, I want that that Wonder Woman picture. Okay, so we go back over to Sharp's table, and I was like, okay, she wants this. And so he takes it out and he signs it to her, rolls it up, puts it in a case, and you know, in a little tube, and he's like, here you go. And she's like, Daddy, when I get home, I'm gonna color this. And I was kind of like, no, you're not, you know, like just kind of joking around. I was like, no, this is for putting in a frame and putting on your wall, you know, it's kind of special. And she kind of just got disappointed. And Jusco's wife was like, dude, she's been walking around this whole place wanting this picture so she could color it. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So Sharp was like, tell you what. And he just like gave her another one. You can color this one. And it was very, very sweet. It was super cool. I bought a print from Jusco. We got home and she colored it, and it was phenomenally well done.
Cool.
Nice.
And so I took a picture of it and tweeted it to Liam Sharp, and he tweeted it out to all of his followers. Like, look at this little girl, how awesome she is. And it just like made her day. She was just like,
that is awesome.
He you know.
Well, you know, working with Comicpalooza the past few years, I work with the guests, and 97% of them are just awesome people. They understand, you know, they need to appreciate what they have from the fans. And, you know, that one of them once told me, it was Kel from Keenan and Kel. I told him, I said, man, you're going to get so sick of hearing Welcome to Good Burger this weekend. And he told me, he said, man, if it wasn't for that, nobody would know who I was. He said, I don't mind. I'll say it all day. And a lot of them have that attitude. You know, they appreciate it very much. What I find the most is a lot of them start off like that and unfortunately end up getting jaded to where they're just assholes. And a lot of it has to do with etiquette by fans, man. You know, there's a reason they end up getting jaded like that. But when it gets to the point where they can't go anywhere and people scream and, you know, nobody will just walk up to them and nobody will ask them for a picture. They'll just sneak and take it.
Mm-hmm.
But, they get aggravated with it, you know. Breedus, me and him talked about it for a while last year. He told me some things like, you know, don't run up to me and just hug me because you don't know if I'm okay with that. You know, don't talk loud. Just speak in a normal voice.
Norman Reedus, he did a live Facebook thing. He showed a picture of his own face, and then he kind of panned around and showed the line and all these girls, and it was like Beatlemania. And I'm like, dude, you don't live that hard of a life. It's pretty awesome.
Dude, me and him were walking through the airport, and women would start crying just by seeing him. It was just nuts. We tried to get Starbucks, and that was almost a nightmare in the making.
Can you imagine being him sitting down with the producers? They're like, well, your character is going to last like 4 episodes and then have it just turn into a culture phenomenon.
Well, you know, what's interesting, me and Rooker had talked about it the next day, because Rooker was on there the first season. He's good friends with Norman, so they hang out after work, I guess you could say. And I was talking about just how I couldn't go anywhere with Norman. Me and him, you know, it was great. We'd go have breakfast and shit. And, he told me, said, the difference is when you're on TV and people love you, you're in their house every week. They don't know you by your real name. They know you by your character name, and you're a part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a real, just strong connection. It's a lot different than just being in movies. And it's true, you know.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay, when did you start drawing? When did you realize that you wanted to be an artist, I guess you could say?
Seventh grade, because I wanted to do tattoo art.
You wanted to do tattoo art? Well, a lot of guys start that way. I mean, one of my friends is a tattoo artist back home in Louisiana. I remember in college, he started drawing this mural in the bar we hang out at. And after 4 years, that was just amazing. It was an amazing piece. And he wanted to be a tattoo artist. That was his goal. Didn't want comics, didn't want any other type of art but tattoo. And he's a great one now, man. Does a lot of great work.
Up until about maybe, I want to say 2014, all I wanted to do was tattoos. I didn't really look at comics. I didn't really buy comics. I didn't even go into a shop. The only thing that got me into a shop was because Corey Taylor from the band Slipknot had done a four-part miniseries for the Stone Sour record, House of Golden Bones. He turned into a four-part miniseries for the record, turned into a comic book.
Right.
And so I was hell-bent to look for that book because I couldn't find the 4 issues, so I decided to trade paperback. And so it was him that got me into the comics, but it was Greg Capullo, when I met him at Comicpalooza, that just pushed it into comic art because I knew who he was because of the show Ink Master, because he was on there for one episode.
Capullo was?
Yeah. He was on the episode Hero and Villains where he, because they were doing DC Comic Day, which they've never done since that day. And I remember listening to Jimmy Litwalk, the artist that was on there, going, I think it was because Capullo was critiquing his Poison Ivy, which was this toony, didn't even look like her. Basically just looked like Jolly Green Giant as a woman. and Litwalk's basically telling Capullo, it wasn't a bad tattoo, but it was DC comic book day. You had to do the image that was in the comic book. And Litwalk basically tells him that he's going to do it his way or no way. And I'm looking at this going, how can you look at the dude who's basically the boss of comic book art that you're not gonna do what you're not gonna do the assignment that you're given?
Mm-hmm.
And like since then, because they had done I think one Batman image or one image from Batman, and it was a Jim Lee work, and Capullo's just basically drooling over the work because it was a Catwoman, and But it was, they were showing images of Batman in the episode to show what he was doing. And I'm looking at these going, these are beautiful works. So I'm going back and I'm looking up Capullo and all he's doing. And so I pick up, Death of the Family, Volume 3 of the Batman, Scott Snyder, Capullo.
Very familiar with it.
And, I'm reading it and I'm going, this is amazing. Just the way he just does like lines for fire. And, like nobody really just makes that effect. Like, and then going back and reading Court of Owls, just seeing the little ornate details he did in the one shot where Talon's kicking Bruce Wayne through that window, and you just see all the little individual shards of glass just from the inside out.
Right.
It's like that's just, the amount of detail for one page was just completely mind-blowing.
Right.
But it was Comicpalooza 2014. I was in line for Capullo, and I wanted to sketch by him. And he does not sketch Batman. I asked him if he would sketch it. I had no clue. Apparently, I looked it up, and people were going, oh, he doesn't sketch. But I was going, maybe I'll get lucky. And so I asked him to sketch, and he goes, I don't sketch. And I'm like, I get all sad, and he goes, well, I can sign it real big for you. And so I'm like, all right, that's fine. And so he's signing it real big, and he starts making lines. I'm like, what is he doing? It doesn't occur to me until after he makes the head that he's drawing the cowl. I'm going, holy shit. After he gets done and hands me the book, I'm shaking. Like, I just gotten the greatest gift in the world.
That's awesome.
And he goes, I don't do this often, so enjoy this. And I met him again last year for the Alamo City Comic Con, and I was telling him about one of my friends. He had passed away in I think March of 2014, I think it was. Anyway, my friend, he owned a shop, and he would hold Capullo stuff for me. Mm-hmm. Like, he would hold books and stuff, and he had died when they were doing the Endgame run.
Okay.
And so I was going back and I was buying anything Capullo because I wanted to keep going. And so I go there and I have a box of nothing but Capullo stuff. Figures of Creech, the Batman. Yeah, I think it was even one off thing. Oh, it was a it was the retailer preview of Haunt, number one. And so I'm going through and I'm going, my friend, he was collecting stuff for me that was your work. And so I'm asking him if he can sign it all. And there's like a line of people behind me. I got about big old moving box full of stuff. And I just see the line, and he looks at the line, he goes, come back after I'm done. And so
I can imagine the collective sigh that went throughout that line when they saw you walk up with all that shit, man.
Yeah. But what was funny was I put the box down, I told him everything that you've done is in this box. And he goes, my whole career is in this one box. And so I tell him the story, and he signs my number ones. He signs the three personal items, because that was rules, like three items and a print. I bought the three-piece art set that he was selling for the new Reborn series, which was pencils, inks, and a colored cover, which was, I think, on, like, chrome paper.
Uh-huh.
And he signs those and my personal things. And he goes, we'll come back later after we're done, and I'll sign whatever you want me to. And so I go, and it's about maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I come back, he's done for the day. He's him and his wife and their I want to say assistants are wrapping up for the day. And so I come back and he starts signing the boxes to the figures, and he starts signing my number ones. And he's talking to me, asking me how my friend died, and he passed of I think a heart attack. And it was just like 3 o'clock on Monday morning. And so I'm telling him that, and he's just going, sorry about your friend. And he signs about maybe 15 things.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't signed the boxes for the toys. I took the toys back out because they were originally out of box.
Okay.
But I had the boxes displayed. And I got the number ones displayed. And it was, I'm one of the biggest hardcore Capullo fans. Like anything that he's done, I'll try to find, collect, whatever.
Right.
But he's basically the one that got me into art, that pushed my love for art, for comics, that made me go from the new stuff to the back stuff. That's how I got into like stuff like Spawn.
Right.
And like the original Uncannies and the old Batmans and stuff like that.
Right.
So
that's cool, man. You know, I'm the same way with Wrightson. Wrightson's like my Stan Lee. That's what I tell people all the time. You know, I've met Stan Lee a couple times. I met Wrightson, I was shaking. I just couldn't believe that I was talking to him. Just because of his Frankenstein series that he did. He's done a lot of work with Stephen King. The man, just to me, he's my top artist. I'm assuming you're the same way with
Capullo. Cool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, look, you brought a friend with you tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic over to him. I'll let you introduce him and explain to our people out there what he's going to be talking about, but you guys pay attention. We have a GoFundMe coming up that we want to let you guys know about.
All right. Let me introduce him. He's one of my best friends. He's been my best friend for the last 4 years. I knew him in high school. I wouldn't be where I am today without this dude. He's one of my best friends.
Oh, thanks,
basically hauls me around whenever I want to go hang out somewhere. But he always ends up having a fun time. His name's Adam Chaney, and he has an important cause that I want to talk about, that I want y'all to listen to while he talks about.
Yes, thank you, John. The thing I came here to sort of promote is a drawing, if you will, fundraiser. I want to do a fundraiser type deal where I should probably start by introducing the GoFundMe first. My aunt, she's got terminal breast cancer at the moment, and she's trying to raise up money for her for medical bills, basically. And she has a 14 $5K goal, and I wanted to sort of help chip in and help out for her for that. So since I'm an artist going to school at the moment, I wouldn't mind trying to do some drawings to raise money. And as soon as I proposed this idea, John decided he wanted to help me out. I don't know exactly how much or how we're gonna go about this, but I'll give you the information.
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll get some links. Definitely, we'll get a link to John's Facebook page for his artwork, where you guys can just holler at him, ask him any questions, and as soon as we get the final information, we'll definitely shoot it out there. But you're talking about a drawing. Are you going to try to give away, do some giveaways, or?
Oh yeah, yeah,
okay,
totally.
Is it going to be any kind of general genre or theme? You're going to do like artwork giveaway? You're going to do just whatever you can collect?
It's definitely an artwork giveaway.
Okay.
I was thinking, to make it a lot easier for, like, to make it more broad, I was going to post it on my DeviantArt.
Okay.
For, like, requested downloads. But, because I have no idea. Yeah, yeah.
What it is we're proposing for every person that donates $1 or $10 or however much you want to donate for... I want to say just start off small. For the first 10 people that donates $10, for every person that donates, you'll have the option to have a piece of art done by either me or my friend Adam, and see how that goes. And if it goes well, we'll try to do more for people that want to donate. It's for a good cause. Breast cancer affects a lot of people. It devastates. It's the silent killer, if you will. It's not something you want to take lightly. So
if, definitely. Oh yeah.
So
prevention is all. Well, like getting it found out at the onset is the best approach to curing it, or getting somebody through this kind of ordeal. That's why testing is always, you know, very important. You know, if you see anything strange. Or if you're at that age where you need to get regular testing, make sure you go ahead and do that. But I just want to let you guys know, just right here, I'll be willing to donate a signed Alex Ross John Romita print for whoever donates $250.
Thank you so much.
I'll definitely send that your way.
Wow.
So you guys can use that to hopefully get a little fundraising going on.
Definitely. I'll tell you the amount we're at right now. It's only $735 at the moment.
Okay.
Out of the 14K goal, but
they have a long way to go, guys.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll definitely pass all those links on, and we'll get you guys links to John's Facebook page, and as soon as we get more information, we will. But let's see what we can do to help, man.
Thank you for having me.
No, no problem. I used to be on the board of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of South Texas. I have Crohn's disease myself. I'm still very involved with them. I'm a patient advocate. I do a lot of their charity events, so I know the importance of, you know, raising money for stuff like this. We're definitely gonna do what we can to help.
Thank you.
Any help I can give you, as far as if you need to get inside with any corporations to see about doing events. St. Orleans is one that I'm sure we could talk to, see if they could do a night over there.
That would be great.
There's a whole bunch of stuff. Brock is excellent. The guy that owns St. Orleans Brewery, he's on the board now for Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, actually. And he does a lot of pub events that are a lot of fun. It's after hours, do a happy hour. Everybody gets in, samples some St. Orleans beer.
No way, man.
They work out real well. So, yeah, we'll definitely see about doing that. Do you have any questions, Billy?
Yeah, sorry, I had to leave for just a second. I had to bounce out real quick.
Okay.
I'm not quite up to speed.
Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and move to a topic that John, our artist guest, picked out today. A Spawn movie's coming out here pretty soon. They're working on it. McFarlane says it's going to be awesome. It's going to be rated R. He wants it to be more of a horrific flick like it should be. I heard some stuff this past weekend about the movie that kind of has me a little hesitant. But I know John is a Spawn fan, so we're going to go ahead and let him talk a little bit about Spawn. What is it about Spawn that you like? What is it?
What originally got me into Spawn was, believe it or not, just the figures. Because the amount of detail that McFarlane puts in the figures themselves.
Right.
Because I think he, not only does he design them, I think he also does... the, I think, first clay renderings of them.
Yeah, yep.
And hand paints himself and basically says, this is what's going to be, do it.
Yeah.
And, but what I find interesting is, it's not like anything else that I was actually ever done. McFarlane, I know he threw in, like, a few cameos in, I think, issue 11 of Spawn early on with, or I think it was issue 10, where there's one jail scene that has all the Marvel and DC guys, like Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Venom, they're behind jail cells and stuff. So I thought it was always funny because that was kind of a slap to DC and Marvel for basically, I don't know what went down, but I just know it's kind of, I think it's more of a screw you to them because right. He got successful off his own project.
Yeah. Now, his Spider-Man work was, of course, you know, awesome. You know, I love all those books, too. He's an artist who has a definite
style.
His own style, yeah. For sure.
I can't say for sure, but I think what happened was that the artist, Todd McFarlane, got more popular than the art, Spider-Man. The artist outpaced the character. And so he was in such high demand that he had that carte blanche. He was able to start calling the shots. And historically, the companies don't like that. They like having famous artists. They don't like having rock stars, because then that person can say, I want to do whatever I want to do. And at the same time as he started doing Image, that's when he started buying up the rights to old books. So there's a little bad blood. I've got a funny, interesting McFarlane story that cycles back around to one of my favorite things, but keep on going, and I'll hit that point in a minute.
No, the figures are great though. Dark Ages and Curse of Spawn are just phenomenal.
Just recently, it's Spawn related, but it was actually Neil Gaiman. Though when he did Angela, that really got me into Spawn, because it was the, because I know Neil Gaiman from Sandman and all that, and I was curious to see what he brought to Spawn, because I actually own one of the original trade paperbacks that still has the Angela in it.
Oh, cool.
I got that for a trade actually, but what got me into Spawn was not only the figures but Neil Gaiman. Because McFarlane did the art for the issue, and just the way that Gaiman wrote it was, I think it was the intro to like the Dark Age Spawn, the medieval Spawn.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you just brought that story back around because of Neil Gaiman. As you know, Neil Gaiman is what kept me into comics. So in the 90s, when everything went die cut, everything had multiple variant covers, everything. In order to buy one comic, if you were a collector, you needed to buy five or six of the same issue.
Or even 11.
I couldn't afford it anymore, and I was getting into going to shows, so I couldn't do it anymore, but I was following the Sandman. And Neil Gaiman is one of my favorite writers, probably my favorite writer of all time. If you go into my office and you see I've got a shelf dedicated, and I've also, thanks to Scott, I have the whole Sandman series, individual issues from number 1 to 75, straight through. I've got all of the trade paperbacks. I'm just a geek when it comes to Sandman. I've got several figures. Gaiman had a problem with DC right around the time the Image was starting. He was already writing books, but he was getting called in to do special edition stories for Sandman. And at some point, he's like, well, wait a second. How much of these characters do I control? Because I'm the one who brought Sandman. Sort of in the same way that McFarlane did for Spider-Man. Spider-Man was always much more famous, but McFarlane became the rock star artist. Neil Gaiman was the rock star writer. And when McFarlane started buying the rights to characters, you're familiar with Captain Marvel, the Shazam, the character formerly known as Captain Marvel, who, through litigation or whatever, well, he Gaiman and McFarlane both bought rights together to Captain Marvel. And because of fights back and forth between these, because, okay, so Shazam, Captain Marvel, the big red cheese with the lightning bolt on his chest, uh-huh. he was originally done by a small company called Wiz Comics that was absorbed by either Marvel or DC. But the character got sold to Fawcett. So Shazam was still being published under an independent while they sort of held rights. And then DC bought Fawcett. So both companies had rights to Captain Marvel. And then DC started publishing Captain Marvel stories and Marvel sued them for the name. So that's when Captain Marvel broke into several different characters like Miracle Man yeah. and Mr. Miracle. And so Alan Moore actually took Miracle Man back in the like the late 80s and revamped it. And I think he did it for an independent company because nobody knew the rights. Gaiman and McFarlane fell out with each other and were suing each other over their rights basically to Shazam. For years. And then whenever it all came down to it, whenever somebody finally dug in, it was found. This was like 10 years later. It was found that neither one of them actually owned the character.
What?
They owned the name, but not the character. And then Neil Gaiman went and did further research and found out that the guy who actually owned the character of the guy in the red with the yellow lightning bolt was one of the original creators. He was like 90 years old. And wow. Gaiman won the court settlement and then went back and like
got it.
Gate was like, dude, you have the rights, you know, you take it. But that's where the falling out was. But there is a synergy of creators that was so magical that if it wasn't for pissing over fucking Captain Marvel, can you imagine what Gaiman and McFarlane could have made together?
They're gonna come up with some stuff.
I mean, man. Really?
Just his imagination and his McFarlane's ability to draw.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
And that Spawn number 12, I have that. That's the one where Neil Gaiman wrote it. McFarlane drew it. And it introduced Angela and Medieval Spawn.
That sounds amazing.
Something I just found maybe, I want to say a month ago, was actually Angela number one, the miniseries that Capullo drew and Gaiman wrote. But I actually have a funny story that my friend David told me. I think it was him that had the box of these. But it was when Gaiman was doing a show and he was walking around, and my friend David, I think he was the one that had just nothing but a box of Sandman number one. And Neil Gaiman tells him, this is the most Sandman number ones I've ever seen in one place. And it's just, I'm going, how? Wasn't Sandman number one another like multi-million print?
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't.
It was not. Sandman was, Neil Gaiman was popular. Like, he wasn't a popular writer, he was an up-and-coming writer. Sandman was an untested. Sandman didn't come into its own until the Doll's House. Yeah. Which if you're looking at story arcs, that would have been like issue like 10 or 12. So Sandman was out for a year before it really started getting picked up. Preludes and Nocturnes was in trade paperback at that point when he started really taking off.
Yeah, the number one, if I'm not mistaken, like a 9.4 is about $120.
Wow. I think I heard this one story of Neil Gaiman. I think it was George R.R. Martin or whoever wrote Game of Thrones. I think it was back when he was doing like I think comics or like small magazine publications. Gaiman was actually submitting stories, and he was getting shot down by the guy that wrote Game of Thrones. And what I think is funny now is I think Gaiman's more popular than
Martin. Sure.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is a cultural phenomenon. Martin's by far more popular than Gaiman. But Gaiman has so much more
history.
He's got so much more various. Martin's popular for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You have different fan bases for Gaiman that enjoy different series.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably all in all, it's a much larger following.
I just think it's better to be recognized for multiple things than just one. This is basically your coup de grace.
It's
your holy
grail.
It's
your magnum opus. This is what you... Well, I mean, I would take Martin's money for sure. But apparently he writes like one page a day. And he's got his average novel's like 400 or 500 pages long. So it takes him a really long time. In fact, George R. R. Martin, apparently there's a super fan, he's some Japanese guy, who put it into some program where he's got all of the characters and how they like know each other and like a big family tree of characters and their relationships and the ones that have died and all of this stuff. And George R. R. Martin uses him as a consultant when he's writing. He's like, I know this guy's still alive. Who does this guy know that's still alive? And this guy's like, well, he knows this guy and this guy and this guy that haven't died yet.
That is awesome, man.
You got a whole bubble graph here.
I tried watching Game of Thrones once. I was completely lost. It wasn't because I came in at like some weird time, but I had known what was going on, but I wasn't really sure who was who because I'd never actually seen the faces. I'm just going, so that person did that person, and that guy killed that person, but who's that guy?
Well, what I know about Game of Thrones is I think there was a 3.5-minute YouTube video narrated by Samuel Jackson explaining to you exactly what's going on with Game of Thrones and catching you up. And he caught me up pretty well, so I got a good handle on what's happening on there.
Yeah, Game of Thrones kind of got spoiled for me because my wife reads. My wife reads books faster than...
Speeding bullet.
Dude, our Amazon bill for books per month is astounding. And you're just like, how can you possibly... But every time she gets a spare minute, it's on her Kindle, it's on her phone, she's just... And so she got the whatever was what was available at the time, which the first book, Song of Ice and Fire, which sets everything, which is essentially the first season of Game of Thrones. And it's extremely detailed and it's very well rendered. The reason it got spoiled for me is that she started reading the third book, not knowing that it was the third one. She thought it was the second one. And she was about halfway through it. And she's like, I don't know when all of these people died. I was like who? And she started like counting off all the
people. They haven't died yet.
And I was like, well, I'm not going to read the second book if I know that half the characters died in the second one. So she finished the series and I just watched the movies or the shows. And I'm happy with the shows. And she's like, yeah, I pretty much followed everything exactly the way it should be right up until like the sixth season when the movies outpace the books.
Okay.
So.
But that's the way it should be. It should follow. That's why like the series like that on HBO and Showtime and other channels, they're perfect because it's not like trying to fit an entire book or series in an hour and a half movie.
Exactly.
You know, you have time to go ahead and follow all the storylines. They've already been created. They're already there, you know?
Which is one of those things, we were talking about Neil Gaiman. So, American Gods, which was a phenomenal book, but way too complex for a single movie, is a TV series. And then they just green-lighted Good Omens, which he wrote with Terry Pratchett, which is going to be a short series, but a series nonetheless, not just a movie. Like 6 hours long, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Which, and if you want to talk about Gaiman, I can go all night. I've read everything the dude has ever written that I know of, that I can afford, because he's got some little short stories and some chapbooks that were like very limited release whenever he was unknown that are like worth $500 or $600 now. I can't do that. Eventually, one day, maybe, but I can't do it. So what's your favorite thing to draw? Whenever you sit down and you're like, I'm gonna draw something, you got a blank sheet of paper and a pencil. What does your hand naturally go to? What are you sketching?
It has more to do with just what I'm feeling. Because I could sit down and go, I want to draw Constantine. Or I sit down and go, I want to do a Lobo or something. But I'll do like small stuff just to get out of my system. But if I'm working on something big for somebody, I'll work it. till it's not any fun to do, then I'll draw something else just to basically recharge, then go back to it. Cause I'll go, it basically comes in spurts, and it's like draw, tired. Mm. Something new.
Do you do original things as well?
I do original stuff, but what I like to do is I like to take images I see and kind of distort them and twist them and change them around. So it's like if I see somebody drew this one character in this one particular pose I like, I'll take the pose and draw the character I like, because it's like there was one where it was Angel Medina who did the like Western Spawn, and he had him with the guns and all that. So I did one where I took that image and I basically turned into Lobo holding the chains.
And okay.
So it just depends on the feel of what I want to do, because originally what I set out to do was just do stuff that I liked. And if somebody else liked the same thing and they want to buy a copy or whatever, more power to them. Puts a bit of money in my wallet and puts my name out there for whoever wants. But a buddy of mine, his name's Chad, he actually goes, I want Swamp Thing in front of the entrance of the Batcave. And so this was going on when I was doing Scott's Swamp Thing, because he goes, man, because my buddy Chad, he's going, man, how much for the Swamp Thing? I'm going, dude, that's not for sale, but I can do one for you. but that's mainly it. Like, I've done a few Spawn pictures here and there, because as much fun as Spawn is, it's like I can draw Spawn, but if I just draw the headshot of him, I can do a headshot of him, no problem. But a lot of people are going, is it Black Suit Spider-Man? Because I'll have the little cape, but they won't really know who it is unless you actually know who Spawn is. But they'll see the wide eyes and the black mask and go, is that Spider-Man when he's in black suit? It's like, no. No, how many times do I hear? Can you tell me? No. So it's like, I try to limit what I draw for Spawn. But as much as I love Spawn, I can't really do much with him except do full body stuff. So that's basically where my art goes. Along with that, I'm a big Alex Ross fan. I'm actually looking for a cover that Alex Ross did for Spawn. It's not like a hardcover find. I can't find it, but I know people who can.
I follow Alex Ross on Facebook and Instagram, actually, and he posts different things. He posted a thing the other day that was just amazing. And it's one of those things where you scratch your head and you like want to go kick a kid, because my daughter's 6, right? She draws pretty pictures. She's actually really, really talented for, you know, a 6-year-old. You say like, oh, that's really good for a 6-year-old, but no, she's really good for just about anybody. Right. But she's really, really good for a 6-year-old. But Alex Ross posted a picture the other day, maybe a week or two ago, of side by side. He's like, me at 7 and me at, I don't know, 37. And it's Plastic Man. And Plastic Man for a 7-year-old is really easy to draw because his arms are bendy, right?
Yeah.
But the new Plastic Man that he had, you know, the picture of him is that the light reflects off the costume. It's extremely hyper-realistic. Alex Ross looks like a photograph of the Plastic Man in some alternate universe that actually exists. And his 7-year-old Plastic Man, you look at it, he's got light reflecting off his sunglasses.
Oh my.
His face actually looks, you know, like he's got a little smirk, but it's not like a cartoon smirk.
Yes.
Yeah. It's realistic, and his arms are all bendy, but you're looking at this being like, okay, this kid is 7? Holy shit. And like I said, my daughter's 6. It's like, Get your look at where the light's coming from.
Come up with your technique. Come on.
Your hand turkey. Turkeys don't look like that. They have beaks, man. Come on.
These long feathers on the back. They don't go down the back.
But, no, he's pretty incredible.
Oh yeah, he is. Alex Ross, I love the realism in his artwork.
He did one the other day, and I don't know. Like I said, we don't get political here, but you know, if you're listening to this many years from now, we're in a bit of political intrigue in the world right now, and we're not even going to go into detail. But Alex Ross posted a picture of Superman as Clark Kent. Actually, it was just Superman in Clark Kent's apartment, leaning back in a chair. He's got his glasses on, and he's like half asleep. And it's just an apartment. He's got a picture of the Kents on a photograph behind him, and it's called Weight of the World. And he's just like sitting there being tired, like Superman being tired. And it's freaking beautiful. Like,
wow. Okay, like, that would be an awesome print, man.
I would love that print. But he just posted that, I guess. For either he's just like finished up making it, posted it, but it's kind of poignant for the time, and it's pretty neat. Like I have that tendency. You have those times when you want to right click and save, and I'm like, no, I'm just gonna wait for the book to come out, because I'd rather have that on my I'd rather just own that.
No, there's. I remember I got the trade paperback from Marvel's, the Alex Ross trade that he did for like the four mini issues. There was just something about it, because what it was it was retelling of the original issue, like the original Human Torch. I remember like the issue number one was Spider-Man, the death of Gwen Stacy. And there's just some issues that I wish he would do another Marvel's with him in it and do like, say like the first appearance of Venom,
that would be cool to see his interpretation of all those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that'd be really neat. I agree with you on that one for sure. Adam, you said you're an artist also, right?
Yes.
How long you been drawing?
Ever since I was about that age, 5 or 6. I'm more of an animation artist.
Okay.
I like to all make stuff move and.
Oh, cool.
This is actually one of my old pics.
Oh, it went out.
Of me as like a... Oh, wait.
Is that a giraffe there?
Yeah. It's actually me in 7th grade, or like 8th grade, where I had a really long neck in my yearbook picture. So I decided, for artistic reasons recently, I'll just like completely revamp my yearbook picture.
Hey, it was pretty sweet, man. I like that.
Nice. Oh, thanks.
Very good. Now, what kind of style do you like? I know horror. John likes a lot of horror stuff, all darker stuff. Like, what kind of stuff do you?
I love John's style because like he's got the comic book, thick line style down perfectly. My style is more loose and cartoony.
Okay.
Like I've seen Adventure Time, like or like any sort of cartoon from like the 50s, where like. Mickey Mouse Steamboat, like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It looks very much like that. Like, I'm doing, that's like more 2D style. I also do 3D animation. And I've got more 3D animations than I do 2D animations, but I want to do 2D animation so bad.
Do you put your art anywhere on Facebook or anything, or people could check it out?
I do. I've been working on a website for myself, but for now, I post most of my stuff on Instagram and YouTube.
Okay.
We'll get those links before we leave, and we'll share them. And then once we're done here, we'll make sure everything links up and goes.
Thank you, guys, so much.
When you say, like, 2D animation, so obviously some of the biggest cultural phenomenons in the last 25 years... Beavis and Butthead, South Park. Yeah. That's all 2D. Is that what inspires you, or is where
definitely
like
Beavis and Butthead, South Park, Futurama, all those cartoons, Samurai Jack, definitely.
Cool.
Okay. And I'm excited about the new one. They're bringing the series back. Samurai Jack is Jack is back. They're supposed to bring. Genndy Tartakovsky, the creator, he's supposed to bring it back this year. But, I lost my train of thought.
Well, while you're there, speaking of
what you're
back,
making, though.
Oh, like
the kind
yeah.
The kind of stuff that... So, earlier tonight, because this is a remote, and this episode's going to land, obviously, later than the one that I recorded earlier, I was at Misfit Toys, where they sell vintage, for the most part, vintage.
I gotta go back tomorrow, dude. I saw a Warriors action figure from the movie The Warriors. I have never seen one of those before. I am going tomorrow to buy that.
But they sell a lot of vintage stuff, and so during the show, I was asking them, what's your, you know, like, what, who's your clientele? Like, what are they looking for? Like, what's their grails and stuff? And he was saying that it's phenomenal how, like, with, especially with horror, but with anything else, like Transformers and He-Man, the kids want whatever is being sold at Target. The parents are like, no, you don't have any idea. And the parents will, the parents are willing to go to the offbeat toy store on the other side of town and spend the money on the old school stuff.
Right.
Because it was better made and it had much more of a cultural impact than
the plastic Transformers.
The plastic Transformers that they're just kicking out. Yeah. And I was telling him about like how I love Transformers and I had a lot of them, but my thing was He-Man. But, you know, that's Filmation 2D cartoons.
Yeah,
so Transformers were like, we didn't have 3D. Like,
nope.
Like every now and then we'd have something that had glasses and it didn't work. And you take
the
glasses
red and blue
off.
And it, yeah, it would work.
You're like, okay. Yeah. But then, you know, the 90s gave way to stuff like Beavis and Butthead and obviously Futurama, South Park, and that stuff. So that's your wheelhouse. That's where we're at.
It really is. The part of that reason why you say 3D is like more prominent, it's kind of faster than like really, really good quality 2D animation, which is what I want to get into, but it just takes so long that like I do these side projects and like they're 3D.
Mm-hmm.
They take quicker to render out and animate and all that. And I'm about to graduate this year, and that's going to be my sort of field.
The 3D so, stuff or the just...
Just rendering.
Just rendering experience.
Yeah. I'm going to try to make it 2D, though.
So you're big fans of Matt and Trey. We love Matt and Trey over here.
Yeah.
They are just a phenomenal team. I love the fact... The thing I love the most about South Park is they no holds barred. They'll pick on anybody. It doesn't matter what side you're on. They don't pick sides. You know, they just give everybody grief. They're geniuses as far as I'm concerned with their marketing and their method and their show. You know, I remember seeing the original cartoon they came up with in college, the black and white Santa versus Jesus cartoon. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But it's amazing they took that into what it is now.
Definitely. And it was classic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was classic when it was happening. When I was in high school, this is long before South Park. When I was in high school, my buddy Chris, who's the dudes and beer guy, he's like, "Dude, you got to come over. You got to watch this stuff my brother recorded off of MTV last night." Like, this is the world we lived in. It's like you had VHS recorders, and when something cool came on MTV, you pushed record, commercials and everything. We go over there, and he had recorded. Some MTV animation special where it was like showcasing independent animators. And there was Beavis and Butthead, there was Jack Mack and Rad Boy, there was Aeon Flux, and there was something else.
Aeon Flux spawned from that?
I
had no idea.
And it was like little shorts, and the Beavis and Butthead, it was like 45 seconds long. And this is like the winning film festival thing that made Beavis and Butthead. It was like they're out in the field, they're playing baseball, and they're frog baseball.
Oh yes,
that's what it was.
Yes.
They're frog baseball, and throws the frog, and he like whacks it, and it explodes against the screen. And then Aeon Flux, you know, it's like starts off, and like her eye goes like that, and the fly is like stuck in her eye. like the Venus flytrap. Uh-huh. She opens it up, and then she's on the train, and she's laying there next to that dude, the white-haired dude that's the other agent. And their tongues are wrapped around each other like this. And then they kind of touch and, like, goes like that, and then you see, like, the little microfilm. So they're sitting there making out, passing the microfilm back and forth. And then she runs this way and he runs this way. He immediately gets shot in the head, and she jumps around. And she used to die in every episode. She jumps around like a ninja, and she's being chased, and she's running, and she's got a rope, and she's about to throw it, and it wraps up around her neck. And you see it, like, you see her doing all of this stuff, and then you see her throw it, and you see her hit the end of the train, and then it goes dark because she dies.
Right.
And it was every episode was like that. It was, the early 90s was phenomenal. It's like coming off of Pink Floyd, The Wall. Like, so much great, like you say, 2D animation. It's like people sit there and just sit there and draw the picture, and then draw the same picture with this little slight, and then do that 400 times for 1 second of animation.
Right.
And you think of all the people that were doing that, and then you got Mike Judge and Aeon Flux people.
Yeah, Groening. Simpsons. Yeah. I mean,
I grew up in that era, so that's what inspired me to go and pursue that.
And the thing about it is, if you look at animation that has come out since 2000 versus the late 80s and 90s, those have become cultural phenomena, man. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows The Simpsons. Everybody knows the South Park. Everybody knows Beavis and Butthead. It's astounding the impact that it had.
My kid gets a little hyper because she eats too much sugar. I'm like, shut up, Beavis. She was like, my name is not Beavis. I was like, you do not want me to call you the other name. Just go clean your room.
Yes.
The only one cartoon that they came out in, I think it was like late 90s, early 2000s, right, like 2004, and it stayed consistent because it was 2D, hand-drawn, was Ed and Eddie.
Yeah.
Because they did a bunch of fourth wall breaking. Like, there was one episode where they were actually taking their own outlines out of each other. they took the outline and the color just ran.
Yeah, I remember in like they took the lines off him and Eddie just like went straight down the drain. Like,
Ed and Eddie was good. I used to watch that with my kids.
Yes.
Courage the Cowardly Dog was another one that I used to love.
Oh, I love that show.
Billy and Mandy, shout out to Grey DeLisle, my friend. She was the voice of Mandy. I got a nice signed little print from her. But Billy and Mandy was awesome.
Wow.
Just all those cartoons were just great. Dexter, I mean, Cartoon Network, really, they saw the impact cartoons had on adults, where you could go ahead and get that viewing audience also. And they ran with it, man.
I remember when I was a little kid, I couldn't have been much more than like 5 or 6. It never occurred to me that cartoons weren't real people. Like, I'd watch The Simpsons.
Right?
And, or not The Simpsons, but I watched The Flintstones or whatever, and they just, as far as I was concerned, that's just...
They really existed.
That was happening somewhere around the world.
And then somebody pointed out...
Oh.
It was like a friend of mine pointed out, it's like, oh no, they're drawn. And then I noticed the lines drawn around like Fred Flintstone. And it blew my mind. I was like, but no, they're alive. They're moving. They're, you know? And like, I'm not, it wasn't traumatic, but I remember being just, wait. You know, you've got Wonder Woman on TV. That was Linda Carter. She was running around. You got Batman on TV. You got Batman in the comic books. Like, they don't look a whole lot different from each other. You know, your mind's not that well developed to know the difference. The Flintstones.
I was
like you say, you pull their lines out. They just, the color just flows down the drain. That's kind of.
Definitely. I definitely had that feeling as a young child. Like, I was willing to accept that I lived in a world where Fred Flintstone was, like, literally on the other side of the planet or something. Or on a different planet being broadcasted on television.
I'm caught up. Do you see that humongous owl in that tree back there? There's a spotlight right on it. But there's a big oak tree. You can see him bobbing his head up and down. There's a huge owl straight that way.
That owl likes Kenny Loggins.
I'm not seeing an owl.
Look straight that way. Straight. Tree's way in the back. There's a light like shining up in one of the trees. Right in the middle, there's a huge animal. I swear, it's got to be an owl. That thing, I just... Straight that way.
It looks like it's wobbling.
It looks like his head is bobbing.
Yeah.
That thing is huge. Okay, sorry about that.
You had too much whiskey.
All you can see what we can see.
Hey, guys.
Another shot.
With that, this has been episode, I can't even see the light anymore.
20.
This is episode 20.
20,
the
yes.
20th episode of the Scary Dad Podcast. Adam, restate what you said in the middle of the show, because I kind of wanted to hit you at the beginning and the end, and I lost track, and then I'm a bad host. So, say again, because if people are listening to us, they're going to listen to the beginning. Mm-hmm. They're going to listen straight through, or they're going to listen to the end and see if we said anything important.
Okay.
So. And then they know they'll listen to the rest. Like, Preach used to say, his girlfriend, he'd always tell her, tell me the point
before
you get into the conversation.
So the point of this show is, John's a badass artist, Scott was late, and yes. Adam has things to say.
Yes. John and I were going to promote my aunt's GoFundMe. And if you guys want to donate, these guys right here will put a link in the description, and we will draw for anybody who donates on the GoFundMe. Just comment what you want us to draw, and we'll do it. I'll post it on my either my DeviantArt or my Instagram.
And we'll definitely keep you guys updated on the drawing, because I will be donating an item to it. Then, like I said, if you have any questions, come to us. We'll have links to their Facebook sites also, and help out if you can. You know, they have a really big goal and a long way to go.
So. Yes.
And to be clear, what is the goal and what's the long way?
The goal is to reach 14K for my aunt's breast cancer hospital bills, and. Right now we are at $785, so we got
a long way to go.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to draw pictures for anybody who donates, is what you said?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure we could figure out things we can do to.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll help out. We'll help out any way we can for sure. Because as a Crohn's patient without health insurance, medical bills can get very expensive very quickly.
I can imagine.
I wouldn't say this right now, and I haven't even told him this, but if I'm gonna try to actually sell at Comic Palooza. I haven't checked my emails yet for about the waiting list, but you were earlier before when we were talking about this. If I get a spot at shows, I'm gonna donate at least a dollar for everything I do to him. And his cause, and if we get to $1,000, I'll do a really big picture for whoever is the 1,000th dollar.
Wow.
Cool. And you guys will know, he's going to be at Comic Palooza. I'm pretty confident about that. And we'll let you know if any other shows come up where you guys can, while you're there, if you're going to be at the show, you can check them out, meet them, and see what you can do to help out.
Hey, guys. Thank you for joining us on our 20th episode out here at Cedar Creek.
Thank you for my excellent commission. It is a beautiful print. I know you guys like it. I've heard a lot of good feedback on it. It's an exceptional piece for sure.
Hey guys, this is our end of the episode plug for ourselves. If you like what you hear, like us, share us, subscribe, push the buttons, go to Twitter, go to Instagram, go to Facebook. We're not attention whores. We just do this what we do. If you like it, help us find other people who like it too.
If you don't like it, please share it anyway and say, hey, you guys have got to listen to these assholes on it.
Tell us anyway. Say you suck because you didn't talk about this. We'll talk about that.
Always welcome in show topics. I'm going to have some polls coming out here pretty soon just to see, get some feedback from you guys, see how you guys feel about the horror community out here in Houston. Some things we can do to improve it, which has always been our ultimate goal, and to grow it, you know. We can't grow without you guys' help.
And guys, fucking separate with some of your fucking money and give to Adam's aunt, because that's just the right thing to do, okay?
Yes. We will deliver the drawings if you delivered the moolah.
I will personally come to your house and put this in your mailbox if you do not answer the door. I will find you.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys. Stay scary.
All right.